Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Hey, Central Ohio. The nationwide Children's Marathon will be taking over the city on October 18th and 19th. COTA riders can expect significant reroutes throughout the city. Operators will be working tirelessly to assist COTA customers. That's October 18th and 19th for the nationwide Children's Marathon. Expect significant reroutes downtown. You can view real-time updates on the transit app or at COTA.com. That's COTA.com. Good luck to all the runners.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Hello and welcome to a Wednesday Live right here on the Early Line on Sports Grid and all across the Sports Grid network. That includes sportsgrid.com/watch, where you can find your favorite destination and consume everything all across the grid. He is Donnie Wrightside. I am Ben Stevens. Mm-hmm. We are here together for the next 3 hours up until 11 a.m. Eastern time, bright and early on this Wednesday. You know it's a Wednesday. You know it is the end of February when we lead off with so much college basketball. As you could look to my left right now and see the docket, a huge night around the nation in men's college hoops. Plenty of top 25 teams in action and a lot to break down around various conferences in the races for regular season championships and, of course, postseason positioning, whether for a conference tourney or the biggest dance of them all. And DRS, after a long all-star break, the NBA officially back on this Wednesday night. Just a single game, a makeup game, a rescheduled affair in Los Angeles between the Lakers and the Hornets. But it gets us underway in this stretch run around the association. So much to get into here over these 3 hours up until 11 a.m. Eastern.
And why not mix in a little Eagles Super Bowl parade rehash again just for the boys out there to have some fun with, as we are in a holding pattern until we get full-blast NBA back tomorrow. And away we go. Major League Baseball, so much more fun to have. But right now, taking center stage, it's apparently college basketball. And we are enjoying it. And maybe is February Izzo month? Maybe February's Izzo. How about that? But last night, bank account, yeah, it was Izzo month last night, baby.
Mm-hmm. Early February, not often Izzo. Later February into the actual month known as Izzo, that's when you start cashing some tickets. But this Michigan State team feels a little bit different, maybe reminiscent of about 5 years ago in 2018-2019, the last MSU team to reach the Final Four. And that's where we start our recap from a Tuesday evening around college basketball. Top 15 tilt inside the Breslin Center in East Lansing. A huge game with direct implications for the Big Ten title race. And the Spartans hold serve on their home floor. A big victory over the Boilermakers, 75-66. Number 14, Michigan State covers as a 3.5-point home favorite, DRS, as we both predicted yesterday with a victory over 13th-ranked Purdue.
Yeah, out-rebounded, had more assists at this point. You take a look at the turnovers, had a better night there for Michigan State, and then also from shooting. By the way, Purdue goes on the road at Michigan State and shoots over 50% as a team and loses by 9 points. Why? Michigan State 58% as a team from the floor. That'll get you every time. I thought they had the home court advantage, used it to their advantage there. 33-31 at the break. Nice second half there for Michigan State, pulling away. The cover, a little bit close late in the game, but Michigan State had a pretty good close there to put that away as well.
It was only a 9-point victory for MSU. Felt like it was a wider gap throughout most of that game, but a game indicative of this Michigan State team. 9 guys last night scoring at least 7 points. The mantra in East Lansing all year long, strength and numbers. Also 21 fast break points. This Izzo's team gets out and runs. Let's go to a top 25 tilt in the SEC. Big one in Starkville. Mississippi State trying to build on momentum for a big rivalry road victory over the weekend in Oxford against Ole Miss. They bring it back home and snap a five-game win streak for seventh-ranked Texas A&M with a big second half and a big 70-54 victory. DRS's guy, Josh Hubbard. Yeah. Only three made threes, but did lead all scorers with 25 points last night. Big victory for the Bulldogs.
That was the dilemma, right? Over 16 and a half points or over four threes. Like the four threes, by the way, wasn't like a minus 110 price. It was plus 160 to 170, depending where you got it yesterday at the FanDuel Sportsbook, which meant they weren't even offering you the three threes made, which probably would have been right around a minus 110 price. So they got you last night. They understood the task at hand. But the task at hand yesterday for Mississippi State, play good defense, which they were sensational in the second half, limiting Texas A&M to only 23 points. Good win by the Bulldogs.
The Aggies had a one-point lead at the break, all Mississippi State in the second half. If you're paying attention to the trends, that's Chris Jans' defense on full display in those final 20 minutes. But A&M has now gone under in nine of its last 10 games. A rather surprising result out in Provo. The odds makers expected the unranked home favorite in BYU to win. They were a 3.5-point favorite against number 23 Kansas, but probably not by 34 points, 91-57, the victory for the Cougars at home. That 34-point defeat, DRS, the largest margin of defeat Bill Self has ever seen in his 20-plus years as the head coach in Lawrence.
It was just bombs away from three-point range. They got off 36 three-point shots, making 14 of those. I thought Kansas actually had a slight advantage, saying, you know what? If they can't make all those three-point shots, we got a good look here. And they usually defend well from the three-point line. Didn't do it last night. And for a team that shoots a lot of three-point shots, to shoot overall around 52% as a team, you're probably going to get beat every single time. Now, most of the time, probably at 91-57. That was an unbelievable performance at home for BYU, improving to 9-6 now in conference play.
Kansas, for a second consecutive year, the number one team in the country in the preseason AP poll. Kansas, seven Big 12 losses. They had eight last season, the most for KU in Big 12 play since the late 80s. Not a good year for the Jayhawks once again. We'll rally things off in the Big 12 with TCU picking up a huge home win in Fort Worth yesterday, pulling off the upset against ninth-ranked Texas Tech. 69-66, the victory for the Horned Frogs. They win outright on their home floor as a 7.5-point underdog.
It's pretty crazy, too, because you look at TCU at home, shot 41% as a team. Meanwhile, you say, well, Texas Tech was probably worse than it was a great defensive game. Texas Tech almost shot 50% as a team from the floor and still lost that game. Why? Winning games close at the free throw line. TCU made 15 free throws to only 5 for Texas Tech. There was your difference.
Elsewhere in the Big 12, Houston wins by 15 on the road in Tempe. Yeah. Iowa State holds serve inside Hilton Coliseum, setting up a huge matchup this weekend between the Cougs and the Cyclones in H-Town. As we keep it going around Major League Baseball, we're starting to get ready for spring training, which means some of those negotiating windows coming to a close, including DRS with Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and the Toronto Blue Jays. Vladdy Jr. set a deadline of Monday night because he would not negotiate throughout the season. No new deal reached. Vladdy Jr. saying they didn't even get close to my asking price. The Blue Jays GM, Ross Atkins, saying we made very aggressive offers. Now a contract year for Vladdy Jr. up in the six.
He always liked this, too. Like, if today Toronto's like, all right, we'll give you the $400 million. Like, nope. Went past the deadline. Even though you're giving me exactly what I want, we're going to talk to you at the end of the season. But there is something to be said about Vladdy Jr.'s not hurting for money right now. He's saying, you know what? I'm a really good baseball player. I'm going to turn it up this year. And then, as he said, 29 teams or so are going to be able to bid on me, and that's where I want to get to. So I can appreciate the move. It's not as if he's like, hey, you know what? I'm making $300,000. If I blow this right now, it's going to ruin my career. He'll be just fine. He'll put up big statistics this year.
Tom Vecchio told you earlier this week, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. to lead the bigs in long balls this year. I bet it at a 40-1 number. contract incentives, trying to prove his worth to the rest of baseball. We are believing in Vladdy Jr. Some NFL news and notes. Andy Dalton returning to Carolina on a two-year, $8 million deal. His 15th NFL season, his third in Charlotte, providing that veteran guidance once again in the quarterback room to Bryce Young.
Exactly. No threat to the starter here, but provides that competent backup veteran that can help the young player in the film room. And also, if he does get injured, concussion, hamstring injury, misses a couple weeks, you got a guy that can fill in that's been there, done that before.
As we get ready for the home stretch of this NBA season, the 76ers finding some reinforcements in Lithuania. NBA vet Lonnie Walker IV making his way to Philadelphia on a short-term deal. Donnie, that's got to be the answer, right?
I got to tell you, like, if you look at the team on paper, it looks fantastic from a bench perspective. But when your starters stink, it doesn't help you out, Ben.
No, it certainly doesn't. College basketball up next on the Early Line.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
A big night around college basketball on a Tuesday evening around the nation, and a big night in the Big Ten as well. Top 15 tilt in East Lansing. Number 14, Michigan State playing host to number 13, Purdue. The Boilermakers coming in riding a two-game losing skid, dropping both of their games last week. Purdue losing back-to-back games in Big Ten play for the first time in 2 years. Now make it three straight losses for the Boilermakers at the hands of Michigan State in a huge game with direct ramifications in the Big Ten title race. It was a game that was a perfect recipe for MSU based on what they have done all year long. 75-66 DRS, the final last night in East Lansing.
Yeah, straighten it out, people. Let's get it together here, because you know what I love about Michigan State here is the fact, Ben, that we said yesterday, I didn't think they were going to be useful at the three-point line, which they don't like to do all that much. But the one thing we knew about Purdue is they're not great defensively inside the arc. And you look at the final statistics, Michigan State shot 13 three-point shots, only made four of those. That's really what they do. But 58% overall from the floor, they took advantage of getting to the rack and making their points there. Also, from a free throw perspective, even though Purdue went 9 of 11, which is great, at 82% as a team, they only shot 11 free throws. 21 free throws here for Michigan State, converting 15 of those. So if you take away what they wanted to do best, which was go inside, you couldn't do that for Purdue. 75-66, it made a lot of sense, and that was the handicap. Sometimes it's like, hey, you know what? Got a little lucky. The team doesn't shoot three-point shots all that well. They made 9 of them last night. This one went according to plan. Make your three-point shots when you can just to keep the offense open, convert at the free throw line, which they did, and then 58% from the team as a team at home from the floor. That worked out in a nice victory there for the Michigan State Spartans and a clean handicap.
DRS last night, nine guys for Tom Izzo's club played at least 14 minutes. Michigan State is the only team in the country with 10 guys averaging 15 minutes per game this year. Michigan State's mantra this season, strength in numbers. Nine guys scoring 7-plus points last night. Off the bench, they had, as I do my quick math, 21 plus 14, 35 points. Mm-hmm. That is what Michigan State does. It is how they have constructed this team. That was a perfect recipe for how this season has gone and the ideal indication of the Spartans' success. 12-3 now straight up for MSU in Big Ten play. 10-4-1 against the spread, covering as a 3.5-point home favorite. We'll get to the Big Ten standings in just a moment. DRS, some concern for Purdue because they have two of the best players in this conference. Two of the best players in the country, in the best point guard in the nation, in Braden Smith, who had 17 points and 8 dimes last night, and one of the best front court players in the Big Ten as well, in Trey Kaufman-Wren, who led all scorers with 24 points. But outside of that, for a Boilermakers team that, of course, with Zach Edey made the national championship game a season ago, if Purdue doesn't really get that help for the rest of the roster, it might not be a deep March run like they had a season ago.
No, you're right. And sometimes it's just a matter of the type of team you're playing and the style of play. I just thought Michigan State matches up really well against Purdue. And also, you're taking a look at not a lot of second chance points, Ben. Did you know, like yesterday, you sometimes see like 35, 36, 38 rebounds per team. How about yesterday? 21 rebounds here for Purdue and 23 rebounds for Michigan State because the offenses were very good. But you want to say this. You're not beating very many quality opponents if the other team is shooting close to 60% from the floor. This isn't going to happen. Yeah. You might catch one an off night. They shoot 37-38%, but you're not going to beat good teams when they're close to 60%, and that's what Michigan State was last night. Turnovers for Michigan State under 10, which means they were getting consistent quality looks at the rim, and they used that to their advantage.
More than 20 fast break points as well. Tom Izzo's best teams get out and run, led by a great point guard, and Jeremy Fears Jr. is that, along with Trey Holloman in the backcourt, a recipe for success for Michigan State. So now back to the Big Ten standings, because, oh boy, what a week it is. Huge victory for Michigan State against Purdue last night, setting up a monumental rivalry game on Friday night inside the Chrysler Center in Ann Arbor. It's Michigan atop the conference at 12-2, a half game advantage over their bitter foes and rivals in the Spartans at 12-3. Again, Friday, 8 p.m. Eastern in Ann Arbor. It's the Spartans and the Wolverines.
Yeah, it's going to be a good one here. It's a good close to the season. You're looking at adding to that one line here, quad one victories, which could be the difference, Ben, of getting a one seed, two seed, or a three seed. Every game matters here in this regular season as we head to the close.
The odds not updated on the FanDuel Sportsbook for the Big Ten regular season championship race. Yesterday, Michigan a slight favorite. Michigan State with that second best price. But keep an eye on that team sitting right there in third. Maybe not going to win the Big Ten title race, but the Wisconsin Badgers are making a statement as maybe the best Big Ten team this season. 11-4 for the Badgers, and not your father's Wisconsin offense. 95 points scored by the Badgers inside the Kohl Center in Madison last night to absolutely blow out the Illini, 95-74. Wisconsin also a 3.5-point favorite, ranked 11th in the country, easily covering on that number. Donnie, if Michigan and Michigan State are ahead of the Badgers in the straight-up records, nobody better covering a number. The Badgers, the best cover team in the Big Ten, now 12-3 against the spread.
Yeah, Shaquille O'Neal said, like, I'm sorry, man, I apologize. I just wasn't familiar with your game at this point. Wisconsin dropping 95 points. That's like back-to-back games on a Tuesday and a Thursday in Big Ten play for them to get the 95 points here. The fact that they won at home by 21 over Illinois, that's pretty impressive. 52% from the floor. But how about this? 10 of 24 from three-point range, good for 41%. But also, not just saying, you know, we're a finesse team from the outside. They got to the free throw line 22 times last night, converting 17 attempts for 77% as a team. That's a fun basketball team. And as we just talked about, last game, 21 rebounds, 23 rebounds. Look at the defense, 39 rebounds yesterday, but on offense, 10 turnovers or less. That's usually a pretty good result, and it was last night for the Wisconsin Badgers.
It is a veteran-laden team. It is a team with a ton of experience, including John Tanjay, who is the transfer this year in Madison, performing as a first-team All-American. Back-to-back games of 30-plus. He had 31 last night to lead Wisconsin and all scores. 15th game this season already, and only 26 total for the Badgers, scoring 80-plus points, matching the most in a season for Wisconsin since 1970-71. And they've only played 26 games. Keep an eye on John Tanjay in that Big Ten Player of the Year race as well. We head to the SEC up next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
A really big night in the SEC, as well as most of them are this year in college basketball. Really big one on this Wednesday evening in the Southeastern Conference coming up as well. The RS, as we go around the SEC from a Tuesday night, top 25 tilt in Starkville. Mississippi State ranked 21st in the country after a huge road rivalry win over the weekend at Ole Miss. Hosting a very hot Texas A&M team, ranked 7th in the country, the 6th overall seed according to that early bracket preview on Saturday afternoon, and winners of 5 in a row. Well, that win streak for Buzz Williams and his Aggies coming to an end last night in Stark Vegas. Mississippi State with a great defensive second half and a 25-point performance from Donnie's guy, Josh Hubbard, picks up a huge home win. The Bulldogs cover as a 2.5-point home favorite. Total of 144 and a hook on the rise throughout Tuesday afternoon. Never even gets close as Mississippi State gets a huge conference victory at home.
Yeah, 36% from three-point range here with volume for the Mississippi State Bulldogs. I actually thought they would shoot maybe a little bit better, even more three-point shots, because Texas A&M will allow that. But the game was won here in the turnover battle. 19 turnovers on the road for Texas A&M. That's always going to spell doom, specifically when the other team only turns it over 11 times. It's effectively eight more shots that you're going to be able to get up at that point. But also understand this. It was the defense for Mississippi State that held true. Only 36% as a team for Texas A&M in that game, which included 34% from the three-point line, and more importantly, only 61% converted from the free throw line, and they only got 13 total attempts. So for Mississippi State to win a game at home by 16 points and shoot 43% as a team, that's a really good look, because the calling card for Mississippi State isn't shooting a lot of three-point shots with volume and making a ton of those. It's really playing good defense, and that's what they did last night. They played really good defense, and they won.
Absolutely so. Holding the Aggies to only 23 points in the second half. A&M had a one-point lead at the break. And our guy, Josh Hubbard, often hoists a ton of the field goal attempts overall for Mississippi State. But at times, not all that efficient. Last night he was 6 of 10 from the floor, 3 of 6 from deep, 10 of 11 from the charity stripe, getting to the foul line often in that matchup against A&M. Mississippi State DRS got off to a 14-1 start this year, perfect 2-0 to begin SEC play. Then they lost 6 of their next 9. Entering this weekend against Ole Miss, they get a win, and then they back it up with a home victory over an A&M team that was playing incredibly well. And if you want to know, there's so many different variations of how you can tell the SEC has a lot of strength and depth this year. But A&M, the seventh-ranked team in the country, that was their seventh game in conference play as an underdog. They are now 3-4, both straight up and against the spread. Elsewhere around the SEC, the new number two team in the country, DRS, looking the part of that. I told you yesterday, if you can grab the Gators at a -115 price to be on the one line as a number one seed in the NCAA tournament, do it quickly. Florida making that known last night in Gainesville. 22-point win, 85-63 over Oklahoma. The Gators cover as a 14.5-point home favorite.
Yeah, I thought the Gators would be able to do whatever they wanted on offense against a team in Oklahoma that does have tempo but doesn't play great defense at all. But it was buyer beware last night, because you were getting the 84.5s and the 85.5s as a team total for the Gators. Look at that final score, 85-63. So depending on when you got those numbers, you were a victor. But also understanding that the Gators like to shoot the three-point shot. They hoisted 32 of them last night, making 38% of those three-point shots. And by the way, 85 points on shooting 45% as a team. Boy, they got room for error as well, which they can see them in the 90s and in the hundreds, which they've done this year.
And their big Aussie, Alex Condon, didn't even play last night. He is a great facilitator in the front court, dealing with an ankle injury. Walter Clayton Jr., who has been their guy for the previous few years in Gainesville, 18 points to lead UF last night. Oklahoma DRS, one of the last four undefeated teams at the D1 level, with a 13-0 start this season. And then SEC play happened. OU just 3-8 in the SEC as of this moment. Florida has won 5 consecutive games. They have covered in all 5. I am telling you, Florida fits the bill of everything we have seen from national championship caliber teams in the last few years. Keep an eye on Todd Golden's Gators.
Absolutely. And by the way, Oklahoma doesn't get any easier here. Mississippi State, Kentucky, Mississippi, Missouri, and Texas to finish the season out. Maybe they just get stuck on 3 wins in the SEC. Boy, Oklahoma, aren't you glad you're in the SEC now in football and also over in basketball?
Not exactly the best year in football either, just 6 wins. But hey, whatever. We'll leave that for a different conversation. Never easy in the SEC. Same story in the Big 12 around the nation next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Plenty of other action on a full Tuesday night slate in college basketball all around the country. DRS, we talked about it to lead off the show. BYU was a home favorite last night, laying 3.5 points. It is always that phenomenon and trend we tell you to keep an eye on. When you have an unranked home favorite in a conference matchup against a ranked team, there is often a reason why. So BYU upsetting based on ranking number 23 Kansas, not all that shocking. A 34-point victory, yeah, that's rather stunning. Matching the largest margin of defeat for Kansas under Bill Self. He has been the head coach in Lawrence since 2003-04. 34-point win for the Cougs last night at home in Provo. Huge win for Kevin Young and his BYU team. They cover as a 3.5-point favorite.
Yeah, what's going on at Kansas at this point, right? 8-7 now in conference play. But the reason you say that is Kansas is usually built on, you have Hunter Dickinson. You're supposed to control the glass. Last night, Ben, 43-33 advantage for the BYU Cougars on the glass. This is a team that doesn't even like to get to the free throw line, just wants to jack up free throws. So you figure we are going to pound you down low, make our layups, and get to the free throw line. Five total free throw attempts for the Kansas Jayhawks? That's unacceptable at this point, because if you want to line up and get into a three-point competition with BYU, they're going to bury you every single time. It's amazing that they were never able to flip the script, and maybe because you were down 20 at the break. The game was over at that point, and then you showed no heart in the second half by getting beat by double digits in the second half here. A terrible look for Kansas last night, but once again, a credit to BYU. Look, that is a tough conference. We're not disputing that, but to just flat out not show up as a top 25 team and get basically bullied by BYU, that can't happen for Kansas.
Donnie, it almost seems like something is amiss with this Kansas locker room and roster. Once again, for a second consecutive year, ranked number one in the preseason AP top 25. Last year for KU, that was the same story. They finished 10-8 in the Big 12, the most conference losses for the Jayhawks since the late 80s, 1988-89's campaign. They were bounced by the round of 32, which is something to note for a Jayhawks team that is often making deep runs in March. So, okay, why were they ranked number one once again? Well, an awesome transfer class, at least on paper. A.J. Storr, who was one of the best players in the Big Ten a season ago for Wisconsin. Zeke Mayo, who was one of the mid-major darlings at South Dakota State. This Jayhawks team, however it's been constructed in this NIL transfer portal era, not really growing and merging and getting along and playing good basketball. They are one more Big 12 loss away from having back-to-back eight-loss conference seasons. Donnie, that's like never happened in Lawrence. Certainly hasn't happened since the late 80s. A disappointing effort last night out of Kansas, to say the least. And I saw this stat last night. How much it changes. So maybe some changes coming. DRS, the Jayhawks have been at least a four seed or better in the NCAA tournament since 2000. They have one of the longest active streaks of reaching the NCAA tournament, but a four seed or better since 2000, more than likely coming to a close this year.
Look, here's what you got to do, Ben. Sometimes you got to shake it up. Keep the coach, keep the players here, but hear me out on this. I know you'll love this. Knock down Fog Allen, build a nice Bryce Jordan-style center on campus, 25,000 seats, reinvigorate the fan base. What do you think? Think that'll help them get back their mojo here?
Like what? You got something against Fog Allen now? Against Allen Fieldhouse being in the fog?
What's wrong with things up? No, I like it. By the way, I do like Fog. You know, the fog, and there's mystique in there. But if there's no more mystique, don't you have to knock it down and like get with the '90s, get with the 2000s, get with the new millennium? Come on now, it's an old arena.
This was on the road last night, in fairness, in Provo. But I was going to say I do hear the point. I do not hear the point. Obviously, keep Allen Fieldhouse. TCU huge home victory last night as well, but not booked as a home favorite against ninth-ranked Texas Tech, a 7.5-point home dog in the Horned Frogs win outright against the Red Raiders. Shout out to our producer, Joe Frizzo, and his father, Mark, proud TCU alum.
How about that? And by the way, 41% again as a team gets it done over a top 10 opponent on your home court. It's almost like a rock fight last night. We knew the two teams weren't going to just jack up 3-point shots. 36% for Texas Tech, 35% here. It's almost like you're saying, how did this game actually become a victory for TCU? Simple, Ben. Yeah. Get to the free throw line, make your free throws. Only 5 made free throws for Texas Tech. You take a look at 15 made free throws for TCU. Sometimes it really is just that simple.
Big results, by the way, in the Big 12. Mm-hmm. Houston takes care of business in Tempe. They beat Arizona in Tucson on Saturday. Back that up with a victory over the Sun Devils on Tuesday night, covering even as an 11.5-point favorite. So the Cougs now a 2-game advantage atop the Big 12. Texas Tech moves back at 11-4. Iowa State also 11-4. Beating last night at home a bad Colorado team by 14 inside Hilton Coliseum. The Cyclones were an 18.5-point home favorite, but setting up a huge Saturday matchup between Houston and Iowa State in H-Town. Donnie, the Cougs have been so good in the Big 12. There were questions about Houston. Could they match what we had seen in the American, in the Big Boy Conference, in the Big 12? Yeah. They're probably going to win their second consecutive regular season crown in their 2 years in the league.
That's impressive. It really is, because the general thought always is, yeah, you got a tough team in a small conference. Wait until you go through that meat grinder like we used to talk, like SEC. Hey, put them in the SEC for football. They'll have 7 or 8 losses on their regular season schedule. And you see Houston really accept that challenge. And by the way, like, the Big 12 isn't like one of those off puts, like, ah, well, you're not going to one of the big, like, no, the Big 12 for 5 to 6 years for me was my favorite conference, because from top to bottom, sure, they were the toughest. And you would wonder how Houston would actually do. And sitting here again, 14-1 as we go to the back end of the conference schedule. It's amazing, man. What a great job they've done down there in Houston with the elevation from going to a lower level conference to a Power Five. Like, yeah, we're supposed to be here and we're dominating. We always thought this was going to be the case. Maybe you didn't.
With all the realignments the past few years, I would still say the Big 12 remains one of the best conferences in college basketball. Sure. Last year, by far and away, the best conference throughout the regular season in college hoops as well. The ACC has had a few down years based on expectation. Mm-hmm. The Big 10 fine, but can't really win anything when it comes to March. The Big 12 has been great, of course, this year. The SEC has that mantle. Marquette, big home victory last night against Seton Hall. Everybody should beat Seton Hall. 18.5-point spread in favor of the Golden Eagles. They cover, winning by 24. I say everybody should beat Seton Hall because UConn didn't on Saturday. In New Jersey, a quad 3 road loss for the best effing coach in the sport. And very, very precarious last night at home DRS in Hartford for UConn for most of the game against Villanova. Trailing by as many as 14 points under 12 minutes remaining, UConn rallies with a huge run down the stretch to knock off the Wildcats 66-59. Even came close to covering as an 8.5-point favorite.
It's pretty wild how that game did finish up, too, because I thought we actually would get some points there. It looked like we were headed towards that, because UConn had a much better performance in the second half than the first. But Villanova just went absolutely ice cold over the final half of the second half here. You can't do that if you want to win basketball games. We expected both of these teams to shoot free throws very well, and they did. 81% for Villanova, 88% for UConn. That should be enough to put you over a total. Wasn't, because why? Villanova was terrible in the second half on offense.
Yeah, they were not great. Eric Dixon, one of the best bucket getters in the sport for Villanova. Pretty quiet night last night against the Huskies. Believe you me, I think there was a lot of tweets that were deleted / have stayed in the drafts going to speak against Dan Hurley had UConn ended up dropping that game against Villanova. It survives for just a little bit. But this Connecticut team, not nearly as strong, of course, as they were a season ago. One of the best freshmen in the country, though, in Liam McNeely, now back and healthy, playing great hoops for the Huskies. Also a stunner inside Pauley Pavilion last night. UCLA on the West Coast has been great this year. Minnesota heads to Los Angeles and wins outright 64-61 as an 11.5-point dog. The Golden Gophers also beat USC in LA over the weekend. Let's get you ready on the early line next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
If you haven't heard by now, a couple of pitchers and some catchers and really the rest of the clubs starting to report for spring training to get ready for the Major League Baseball season in 2025. just over a month away from those regular season matchups getting started. So DRS, basically the offseason, the hot stove around the winter in MLB coming to a close, especially if you insert a deadline of Monday evening to negotiate a long-term contract extension with your organization, which is what Vladimir Guerrero Jr. did with the Toronto Blue Jays. And by various indications, they weren't really all that close, as Vladdy Jr. will enter the final year of his contract in 2025. Vladdy Jr. saying that the Blue Jays didn't really get all that close. GM Ross Atkins for Toronto saying we made a lot of aggressive offers. Regardless, the deadline is through. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. does not want to negotiate a new deal during this season, even though the season is still a little bit more than a month away. Donnie, what do you make of Vladdy Watch up in the six?
Yeah, well, he's seeing how much some of these other guys are getting paid. And let's just say a Juan Soto basically feels like he's going for $1 billion in Shohei Ohtani. He's like, well, I at least should be half as paid as those guys here, and maybe rightfully so. But also, that means that you get to free agency where everybody can bid on you. You have to understand this. A team is going to say, yes, we love you. You know, we'll take care of you. You've been with us, homegrown talent. Let's just see if we can work something out. But then the agent's going to say, well, I think he's worth this amount. You're not worth that amount unless you have competition who's actually going to pay you, which means once you get to free agency, all it takes is three teams to get into a bidding war, and it starts at $250 million and ends at $400 million. But the Toronto Blue Jays feel right now they're probably bidding against themselves, and why would they give you overall true market value when you're not a free agent just yet? Now, you can spin the wheel and do one of those things. Hey, you know, Vladdy, you go out there, find that contract, make sure your agent gets back to us. We'd love to sign you. We just want to make sure that deal is valid. But it is also interesting we always have these imposed deadlines, because you do need deadlines, even if they are meaningless at this point, because up until the season actually starts, you want to set it just to see where the team is at. Are they willing to negotiate and move forward or no? So you say no at this point, there's still going to be talks here. That's going to break down and not go ahead, because I joked the start of the show to say for Vladdy Jr., if they offer him exactly what he wants today and he goes, oh, no, that deadline was last night, I'm not going to negotiate, that's not going to happen at this point. You would like to see something work out, but the jokes play themselves where it's like, you know what? He's going to be a Dodger next year. Let's just accept it.
And that, of course, is now a part of the conversation. Vladdy Jr. said the Blue Jays did not get all that close, but then reiterated that he wants to be a Toronto Blue Jay for life, but now they're going to have to beat out 29 other MLB teams. So who would be some of those that could pay him the big deal he is expecting? The Yankees and the Mets and the Dodgers all floated as potential destinations. Now, he's not going to get the Juan Soto 15-year, $765 million deal. But Vladdy Jr., also like Juan Soto, about to turn 26 in just about a month in the middle of March. He has played 6 years in Major League Baseball, all six in Toronto. The last 4 years, he has been a Major League Baseball All-Star. Finished sixth in MVP voting this year. Back in 2021, when he led MLB with 48 dingers, he finished runner-up in MVP voting in the American League. DRS, he has been productive. 30 home runs a season ago, batted .323 with more than 100 ribbies as well. We talked about this with Tom Vecchio earlier in the week. Vladimir Guerrero Jr., 40-1 to lead the bigs in the long ball this year. I bet it because I believed everything that Vecchio had to say. That was before Vladdy Jr.'s deadline on Monday night. You would think he is especially trying to show out this year if indeed it is a contract year.
And he's got a great division to do it in, tiny bandboxes. You saw Toronto had a decent ballpark, turn that into a carnival, which we'll see if he can actually hit more balls into the seats. Yankee Stadium is an absolute joke, and so is Boston. So if there is one division that you may be able to take advantage of the long ball if your game is tight, then you should have a good season. Also understand this, and you're right about this. Guys that enter into the contract year where you say to yourself, I will be set for life, I just need to do what I've been doing and maybe 5% more, you expect him to come in at the best shape of his life and the most focus you will see. So the expectations certainly are extremely high. And also understand Toronto. Over the past couple of years, underwhelming performances as a team overall. Sure. A lot of talent, just not getting across the finish line, or at least trying to challenge for a World Series championship. Maybe they can do that this year. You know, you add Santander in the outfield. If you get that reinvigorated Vladdy Guerrero, Springer in right field. They do have some pieces in a very tough division. But if you're betting on Vladdy, I wouldn't bet against him. Let's put it that way.
Over under for his home run prop is 30.5. To get 40 plus, it's a 3-1 number. But last year, the Blue Jays DRS, to your point, just 74-88, finishing dead last in the American League East. Yep. Speaking of that division, a lot of news this week about Alex Bregman signing with the Red Sox. Man, what a celebration for Boston. But then Rafi Devers is like, hey, hot corner's mine. And then Rafi Devers dies, backing him up. Like his first baseman, Tristan Casas, who basically says, yeah, my third baseman, Rafael Devers.
I think it's Rafi Devers' position. I think he's the third baseman, and at that point, that's where it stands. And he's done it for, you know, a really long time now. And I think he's only getting better at that position. I think his defense is getting better every single year. We don't know what the future holds, but we know it holds Rafi Devers. So I think he's got to play defense. It's going to keep him athletic, and he's going to hit because of, you know, him being at third base. He doesn't know any other position. He doesn't want to play any other position, and he's going to fight for it, even if it's with any of the younger guys, any new guy. I think he's the best third baseman in the league. I wouldn't take anybody over him. So I think he should play third base. Yeah.
You could understand grandstanding for your guy, DRS, but not exactly the warmest welcome to Alex Bregman in Beantown.
Yeah, the shout-out would have been like, you know what, Rafael, be a team player, man. We just got Bregman. Let the man have third base and be a DH, and let's be happy. That would have been a more AI-approachable thing there if we could have changed that up. But you understand that. They're good friends. He's going to back his friend. And by the way, it looks like a pretty good 1-9 right now in that Boston lineup today. So if you're looking to bet some of those overs, maybe it's Boston and Boston, BSS.
86.5, the win total for the Sox this season. More on the early line next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Some big news around the National Football League. The franchise tag window is now open. And Donnie, speaking of openers, for a second consecutive year, we will have a Sao Paulo game in Brazil to start the 2025 NFL season. And we have learned who is designated as the home team for that Brazilian debut. It will be the Los Angeles Chargers. That news coming down the wire just about half an hour ago.
Yes, and looking forward to it because I love the way the NFL starts the season. Now you're going to have the world champion Philadelphia Eagles at home at Lincoln Financial Field on a Thursday, something everybody's going to want to see, and the ratings will prove that. But then the Friday, like we don't have to wait till Sunday, Ben. You get Friday. You get that night game again just to really kick off that NFL weekend before you get to Sunday's action and then Monday as well. I love the game, not necessarily overseas, but the fact that it is on a Friday night. And also understanding this year, you know, you have Brazil, Madrid, three games in London, Berlin, and Ireland. Now, for me, more games the merrier. I like big circumstances. Yeah. But there gets to a point where are we doing this a little bit too much? Because understand this. If we did, and I just sent the tweet out, play all of these international games on a Friday night, I think it would be sensational, and I think the ratings would help. Because quite frankly, they're usually not sending their best, quote-unquote, for those overseas games Sunday mornings at 9 a.m., which is okay. We're on the air. We get to watch it on the PFT crew. But also, West Coast time, 6 a.m., I think it might be better served where they can sell a package to Netflix for the overseas games played on a Friday, and I think it will be a big win for everybody.
You would assume the Sao Paulo game is going to be on a Friday, not necessarily confirmed for this second rendition down in Brazil, but it does make some sense. A lot of international flair to this season in 2025, as Donnie mentioned, with Dublin also a site they will visit this year. It's what college football has been doing for quite some time now in the Irish opener and the Dublin debut. Farmageddon this year, by the way, Kansas State and Iowa State in the opener over in Dublin. You're not going to be able to hide enough Guinness from those crowds heading that way. But listen, it's what the NFL is trying to do to further its international brand and reputation. DRS, also big news again around the NFL yesterday. Franchise tag window opening. It is open for 2 weeks until Tuesday, March 4th at 4 p.m. Eastern time. A couple of notable franchise tag candidates around the NFL. Sam Darnold in Minnesota. Don't necessarily expect that to be the case, especially because the going rate for a tag quarterback would be more than $41 million. The Bengals have told us they plan to franchise tag T. Higgins, so it gives them the advantage of keeping him in-house to further have the time to negotiate that long-term contract agreement. Stephon Diggs in Houston, probably unlikely. Wide receiver set to make $25.7 million this year. Osa Odighizuwa in Dallas, a candidate. Ronnie Stanley, of course, coming up as a free agent, trying to remain in Baltimore. Trey Smith on that offensive line, one of the bright spots really on the O-line this year for Kansas City. Those final two guys, the two O-linemen there, DRS, at the bottom of the page, based on cap space or probably lack thereof in Baltimore and Kansas City, more than likely also not franchise tag candidates as well.
Yeah, they're really good candidates, but you're right, Ben. You hit the nail on the head. Like, you're doing it wrong as a franchise if you actually have to execute and use a franchise tag. It defeats the entire purpose. Like, yes, the NFL put it in because you don't want to lose your superstar, so that gives you a way to keep them for an extra year. But the whole point of signing your superstars earlier than before they hit free agency, you give them a good contract, you take care of them, they're going to accept that money, and you can spread it out over the length of terms of the actual contract itself. Like, you take a look at T. Higgins. Like, hey, let's get T. Higgins back. Okay, it's $26 million. You can sign a $100 million contract guaranteed that can count like $5 or $6 million against the cap, not the full amount early on. So when you take a look at Ronnie Stanley, you can't just say as the Baltimore Ravens, hey, let's get into the offseason and tie up $26 million right off the bat. The same thing with the Chiefs. You can't do it. You got to sign these guys earlier and avoid the tags at all costs here, but that's the penalty that you play with. If you didn't negotiate and you got in the game late, that's going to hurt your football team down the line, even if it does help you keep your better players.
It's really well said by DRS as well. Of course, as the salary cap continues to rise and rise and rise in the NFL, and average salaries, which is what these franchise tag numbers are based on, skyrocket as well, you're not really getting a discount. And it's all base salary. So if you were to extend one of these guys and front-load a deal based on guaranteed money, signing bonuses, it is more financially flexible and beneficial to your organization than it is having to pay that base salary, because these are substantial contracts. You might be able to get a discount in terms of annual average value, but you're not really saving your franchise any money. Hour number two, up next on the Early Line.
Moro Casino. America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Hey, Central Ohio, the nationwide Children's Marathon will be taking over the city on October 18th and 19th. COTA riders can expect significant reroutes throughout the city. Operators will be working tirelessly to assist COTA customers. That's October 18th and 19th for the nationwide Children's Marathon. Expect significant reroutes downtown. You can view real-time updates on the transit app or at COTA.com. That's COTA.com. Good luck to all the runners.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.